VOA News.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called on the European Union to do everything now, as Mariupol's mayor says that more than 20,000 deaths have occurred in his city.
I cannot judge for sure because there is no access to the city at all. Situation in the city is very, very difficult. It's catastrophic.
Plus, what is known about the allegations that Russia has used chemical weapons in Ukraine?
U.S. intelligence officials, U.S. defense officials have said repeatedly it's something that is part of the Russian playbook. It's been seen in Syria, it's been seen elsewhere.
And later in the program, some officials suggest that two Nordic countries could join NATO as early as this summer. Today is Tuesday, April 12th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called on the European Union to sanction all Russian banks and halt imports of Russian oil as he issued his latest appeal on Tuesday for support in ending Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The Ukrainian leader told the EU that everything possible must be done to make sure that Europe's answer to the Russian aggression is a really strong one, as well as a united one in this round of sanctions, not later ones. He also added that the EU can and must do it. Ukraine's deputy prime minister also said that nine humanitarian corridors had been opened on Tuesday, including one from Mariupol for use by private cars. That, as the city's mayor says, that the siege of the Ukrainian port city has killed more than 20,000 civilians. Earlier today, I caught up with reporter Anna Chernikova in Kyiv to learn more about the developments.
Were confirmed by the president of Ukraine as well. And of course, we cannot say for sure and we cannot judge for sure because there is no access to the city at all. Situation in the city is very, very difficult. It's catastrophic. It's really devastating to see the footages of the destroyed city because 90% of the city is destroyed. It's devastating to listen to the stories of people who managed to survive and who managed to escape. According to the latest information, all the evacuation corridors are not working. So basically, official side, Ukrainian side cannot evacuate people, but some civilians managed to escape with their own transport, with their own cars. And the past couple of days, around 300 of people to 500 of people managed to escape. So this is the only way how we can get, understanding of what's going on. And unfortunately, this number of 10,000 people might be bigger.
Anna, what can you tell us about the fighting in and around Mariupol, since that has been a city that has been largely cut off from the rest of Ukraine?
Well, for the moment, it's one of the main battlefields, and it is the main battlefield starting from the 1st of March when the city was blockaded, and since then the fighting are going on. The fighting do not stop. What we can see that very soon, in a couple of days, maybe more, maybe less, the escalation, really severe escalation, will happen in the east, in the east south, if to be more precise. And unfortunately, Mariupol would remain one of the main battlefields and one of the main cities fighting because this is extremely important point for both Ukrainian side and Russian side. So Mariupol would remain, unfortunately, one of the most damaged and one of the most hot points in this war.
Anna, you mentioned the fighting that's anticipated in the east in the Donbass region. What can you share about the latest estimates from the Ukrainian government in terms of troop deployment by Russian forces looking to fight in the Donbass?
Estimations are that will be another, separate war, basically, because what is expected is that the battle would be very, very tough, very intensive, and Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Kuleba, mentioned, it will be a battle which would look like a Second World War. So this is basically what Ukrainians are expecting and what Ukrainians are getting ready to. Unfortunately, we should be ready for very severe battles, and unfortunately, a lot of civilians would probably continue to suffer.
Anna Chernikova reporting from Kyiv, Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin flew into Russia's Far East for Ukraine talks with Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma continues our coverage.
Speaking on a visit to a space launch facility in Russia's Far East, Putin charged that Ukraine was turning into an anti-Russian bridgehead where sprouts of nationalism, he says, and neo-Nazism were being cultivated. Ukraine and its Western allies have dismissed such claims as a cover for the aggression on Ukraine. Putin also reaffirmed his claim that the Russian special military operation was aimed to protect people in areas in Eastern Ukraine, controlled by Moscow-led rebels. He also said the campaign was aimed to ensure Russia's own security. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Media reports citing U.S. officials suggest that two Nordic countries could join the NATO alliance as early as this summer. Reuters' Ilian Rubens is up next.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine is prompting Finland and Sweden to rethink life outside the NATO alliance. A majority of Finns, who share an 800-mile border with their Russian neighbours, already say they would sign up to the military alliance. Swedes are more hesitant, but even there, approaching 60% would favour NATO membership, especially if Finland joins. Rachel Rizzo, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council think tank, says they would be knocking at a fairly open door.
There are serious implications of Finland especially joining NATO. I mean, this means that the total land border between NATO territory and Russia would more than double. Right now, it's around 754 miles. If Finland joins, it will be nearly 1,600 miles. And so that's a significant change. But I think that NATO allies understand how significant the Russian invasion of Ukraine is and what it means for Euro-Atlantic security. And there is broad support amongst NATO's 30 allies for Finland and Sweden's membership at the moment. I don't think that there will be any spoilers amongst allies at this point in time.
As close friends but non-members, technically Helsinki and Stockholm don't have the protection of NATO's guarantee that an attack on one ally is an attack on all. But they do regularly participate in defense training with NATO countries like Norway. And that brings certain benefits, says Rachel Rizzo.
If Sweden or Finland came under attack by Russia, I do think that the alliance would be ready to respond, even though those two countries are not yet members. They work so closely with NATO in terms of exercises and in light of the Russian invasion.
Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said on Monday that full ascension by the Nordic neighbors to NATO would not bring stability to Europe.
Now, obviously, Russia has said that Finland and Sweden joining would be seen as a direct threat to Russian security. We should expect to see things like increased hybrid threats, cyber attacks, information warfare for Russia to try to, as it always does, threaten and intimidate potential NATO members.
Both the Finnish and Swedish leaderships are reviewing their security policies and the prospect of life inside NATO. Finland will be ready in a matter of days. Swedish Foreign Minister Ann Lind told reporters recently that Stockholm is further behind.
We are not there. We have the analysis. We are not going to make any decision without a thorough analysis. That's how we work in Sweden. Thank you.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has said it would be possible to allow Finland and Sweden in quite quickly. But the military alliance has not commented on what a fast-track process could look like or how soon.
Ilan Rubens from Reuters News. British Armed Forces Minister James Hapi said on Tuesday that all options would be on the table in response to any use of chemical weapons in Ukraine by Russia.
Verifying it is clearly very important, because if chemical weapons have been used, that is a very important moment for our Prime Minister and other heads of government around the world to consider how we would respond. But as I've said, all options are on the table, and President Putin should be clear that the use of chemical weapons is simply not acceptable.
British Foreign Minister Liz Truss on Monday said that Britain was working with its partners to verify the details of reports Russian forces may have used chemical agents in an attack on Mariupol. Not long ago, I spoke with VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden to dive deeper into what is known about the alleged use of chemical weapons by Russian forces.
Well, U.S. officials obviously are extremely concerned about the allegations. It's something that U.S. intelligence officials, U.S. defense officials have said repeatedly is something that is part of the Russian playbook. It's been seen in Syria. It's been seen elsewhere. And so they are concerned that Russia will eventually, at some point, use chemical agents, chemical weapons, as it's trying to take territory and defeat Ukrainian troops in Ukraine. That being said, a senior U.S. defense official said on Tuesday, it is very difficult, especially in the context of the recent allegations in the city of Mariupol, which has been described as under siege, which has been the focus of a heavy bombardment, to prove in this instance whether the allegations of chemical weapons use are indeed real. The U.S. says so far it cannot verify that chemical weapons were used. It is looking at it. It is trying to get information. But it's hard, they say, because they don't have people on the ground. Given the situation with the war, it's hard to get soil samples. Depending on the amount of chemical agent that was used, it may not be even in the soil samples. And they don't have the ability to talk to people easily on the ground, doctors who may have treated people who came down with some of the symptoms that have been reported. So they're concerned. They're watching it closely. They're not able at this time, though, to confirm whether or not the Russians did indeed use chemical weapons in Mariupol.
Jeff, I also wanted to ask you about Russian forces themselves. According to U.S. estimates, Russia has launched more than 1,500 missile strikes against Ukraine since the beginning of the war. There's also been this observed pullback from around Kyiv and emphasis on the Donbas region. What can you tell us about the current status of Russian forces?
Well, they said just about all of the Russian forces that have been arrayed against Ukraine and gone into the north looking to take the capital of Kyiv and other areas, they've been pulled back. They were moved either to Belarus or to parts of Russia. And now U.S. officials are saying that they're seeing indications that those troops are starting to be sent to the east, to the Donbas area, where Russia has said it's going to be concentrating. Russia said publicly it's going to be concentrating its efforts. The U.S. and U.S. defense officials have also said that they've seen a concentration of Russian air power, of missile strikes, of airstrikes in Mariupol and in the Donbas, where, again, possibly the U.S. is looking at what could be the start of a revamped, regenerated campaign in that part of the country. So they're seeing the indications that the Russians are starting to make good on their promises of focusing their campaign there. Of course, on Tuesday, Russian President Vladimir Putin said publicly that Russia is going to calmly and rhythmically continue its campaign and that negotiations with Ukraine are at an impasse, which would suggest that the fighting is not going to let up anytime soon.
Jeff Selden is VOA's national security correspondent. Jeff, thank you very much for your reporting today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. On Monday, Russian opposition activist Vladimir Kara-Murza, who was twice sickened in incidents he suspected were poisonings, was detained by police in Moscow. Danilo Galperovich from VOA's Russian service provides this update on what's known about Kara-Murza's whereabouts on Tuesday.
So Vladimir Kara-Murza was sentenced today to 15 days of arrest after he was detained by police yesterday near his home in Moscow, and he spent last night at the police station. This is so-called administrative arrest. It's not a criminal punishment, but the conditions of detention in Russian pre-trial centers are often terrible. There is serious danger of infectious diseases, including COVID, and decision was made in one of Moscow courts, but can hardly be called a court because the judge refused the request of Kara-Murza defense to question in court the policeman who actually detained him. that is, the judge denied the basic right of defense. So Karamurza himself, as it can be seen from the photos which posted on Facebook by his lawyer, Vadim Prohorov, he was cheerful and optimistic. And I know from Vadim Prohorov, they will appeal the arrest.
Danilo, can you also kind of share with our international audience who may not be that familiar with Vladimir Karamurza, you know, who exactly this individual is and his relevant significance in Russia?
Vladimir Karamurza is a former Russian journalist who has been involved in political opposition to Kremlin since mid-2000s. Yeah, I know him for 20 years, and 20 years ago we were working together in London on the visit of Vladimir Putin, his first visit to UK. Vladimir was one of the closest friends of Russian opposition leader Boris Nemtsov, who was killed in 2015. And he was Nemtsov's colleague in the Parnas People's Freedom Party. Karamurza also was a vice president of the Free Russia Foundation. He testified several times before the U.S. Congress, and he was close to the late Senator John McCain. He is behind many initiatives to sanction Russian oligarchs and, of course, to sanction Kremlin after the beginning of the war against Ukraine.
And one last question, you know, you brought up the notion of opposition movements within Russia. Since the war began, there has been a very intense crackdown, not only on free media within Russia, but also any kind of opposition to the war. What is the current state of opposition movements in Russia that you know of?
You're absolutely right. The opposition in Russia has been literally crushed. Alexei Navalny, who is the probably main oppositional leader in Russia, he's in prison now, and his associates and other real oppositionists have left the country for the fear of persecution. But not all opposition activists have left or silent. For example, the party that has been in some odds with Navalny but still considered the democratic opposition, it's Yabloko by Grigory Yavlinsky. They openly opposed the war. They called Russia hostilities against Ukraine crime, and members of the party are now regularly fined or arrested for speaking out against the war. And street protest is mostly suppressed.
VOA Russian service reporter Danila Galparovich. As more people are fleeing Ukraine into neighboring countries to escape the war, Poland is seeing an influx of refugees at its borders. Among the displaced is a Ukrainian-Ghanaian family. VOA's Miriam Gawey spoke to that family.
Since Russia invaded Ukraine in late February, Poland has received some 2 million refugees. Many have arrived in the Polish border town of Medyka, one of the main border crossings with Ukraine. Lilia Chingpong and daughters Esther and Jasmine are among those who made the crossing in Medyka. Esther Chingpong, a human resources manager from Kyiv, says the journey was not easy.
It is really terrible and really hard to understand, and I feel tired and exhausted, yeah.
At the camp in Medyka, they grabbed some food before boarding a bus to Germany. Lilia Chingpong's husband, Samson, is Ghanaian. She met him while he was studying in Ukraine.
We have four children, and he loved Ukraine, and he decided to stay, not to leave.
Mary Mgawe, VOA News, Medyka, Poland.
Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has inspired his citizens by staying in Kyiv to lead the fight against Russia's invasion, captivating much of the world with impassioned speeches, urging leaders to do more to help his people. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has this look at how the former comedian and actor has evolved into the wartime president of today.
Всім доброго ранку, українці. Зараз в мережі дуже багато з'явилось фейкової інформації, що
2 days after the invasion of Ukraine began in February, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky filmed himself outside in Kyiv to dispel disinformation that he had fled the city under Russian bombardment and to reassure his fellow citizens that he was there for them. Since then, Zelensky has appeared almost daily, speaking to the U.S. Congress and to parliaments and other institutions all over the world via video to ask them to provide more aid and more weapons to stop the slaughter of his people. Few people would have expected this kind of raw courage from the 44-year-old former actor and comedian, an expert tells VOA. Elizabeth Shackelford of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs spoke to VOA via Skype.
I don't know if you recall, but the week before the invasion, there was a whole series of hot takes about how this comedian was in over his head and how, you know, poor Ukraine to be led by this bozo, you know, leading into this horrible crisis. I mean, those did not age well. And you really never know who's going to show up and rise to the challenge.
Zelensky was a successful entertainer, actor, and businessman before going into politics, winning Ukraine's version of Dancing with the Stars. Another expert explained how this helps him connect to people across the world. Samuel Hunter is a psychology professor at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
And so, you know, he gets a law degree. He goes into the entertainment industry and runs a successful business. And so he's had kind of a wide array of experiences in his early life, and as a result is able to connect to a fairly wide group of individuals, whether they're, you know, the older generation or the younger generation.
Zelensky became a TV star playing an idealistic teacher who ran for president to fight corruption in a show called Servant of the People. Life imitated art when Zelensky defeated Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko in a landslide runoff election in 2019 on an anti-corruption platform. He had big plans for his country. Former ambassador to Ukraine William Taylor tells VOA.
When I saw him, when I first met him, of course, back in 2019, he was enthusiastic. He was confident, maybe even idealistic about the kinds of things he was going to be able to accomplish.
Zelensky embodies what psychologists call a charismatic style of leadership, forward-looking and change-oriented, Professor Hunter tells VOA.
And so he led on a platform of taking Ukraine to the next level in terms of advancement and economic growth. It was all about a shift from the past.
Zelensky, facing death and destruction in his country, yet refusing to give up, has joined the ranks of world leaders who have risen to the challenge, Hunter tells VOA.
And that's not entirely uncommon for leaders on a large stage to have these crucible moments, whether it's, you know, Lincoln's Civil War or Kennedy's Cuban Missile Crisis, that these galvanizing events that elevate some bubbling personality traits or some bubbling approaches, and they just become crystallized in that moment. And so you do see leaders sort of rise to the stage at times and become almost otherworldly in those moments.
Experts say Zelensky's decision to refuse U.S. safe passage out of Kyiv and instead stay during the war has made all the difference for his military and his people. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with the latest developments on Ukraine as well as news and events from around the world. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com and following us on social media. That's at VOA News. On behalf of our entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.